Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. For 29 years, John Erling provided the talk of the town in Tulsa with his morning show on KRMG, commenting on the news, spicing up local controversy, sometimes upsetting his listeners, other times helping people through difficult times, but always entertaining and provocative. Now, he stepped down from daily broadcasting nearly 10 years ago now, but for the past 5 years, he's been collecting the stories of Oklahomans, many of them great and famous, others known as just as important to only a few. His Voices of Oklahoma project is a series of long-form oral histories with over 160 prominent and important Oklahomans, as well as everyday Oklahomans who witnessed important events and people. Erling has his subjects share their life stories from their childhood and early family life, wherever it led them in Oklahoma, throughout their career, as well as the people and events that profoundly affected them during their life. Last year, the Oklahoma Center for the Humanities at the University of Tulsa acquired Voices of Oklahoma and is continuing that work. And Erling continues to record oral histories, including the daughter of Woody Crumbo, the sister of Woody Guthrie, along with Osage rancher Frederick Drummond, journalist Frosty Troy, and Ken Neal, to name just a few recent interviews. And Voices of Oklahoma is celebrating its fifth anniversary this month. John Erling joins us today on Studio Tulsa. John Erling, welcome to Studio Tulsa. It's long overdue. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here, believe me.
You and I, we share a somewhat of a comradely sort of a relationship. We are probably the two people who talk to more people in our community than anybody else with Studio Tulsa and Voices of Oklahoma. Now, how did Voices of Oklahoma get started?
Well, I became a friend of Walt Helmrich's many, many years ago, and he and I would have lunch once a month. I never understood that because I'm just a North Dakota farm boy and here's this wealthy man here, but he loved listening to the radio. And so he'd tell me all these great stories. And one day I thought, these stories need to be shared by a lot more than me and maybe his family. And so I was driving down the road one day. I get my best ideas when I run or when I drive my car. And it occurred to me if I took his story and others like it and put it on a website so that everybody could listen. So I never knew when he'd think an idea was really good or not, because he wasn't afraid of telling me when they weren't. I said, Walt, what do you think if we take your voice, because I wasn't sure if he wanted to be public or not about this, and put it on a website. This is for education purposes, for students, for research, for the coming generations. And he immediately said, yes. He says, I think that'd be a great idea. I said, would you ask your friend Henry Zero to also be interviewed? And he said, I will. And so Henry was also interviewed, and that is the way it got started. And then Walt helped me get a few other interviews as well, and they both invested in it as well through their foundations.
And really, one of the things you've tried to do through this is not only tell a story of a life, but the broader context of the life and what it means for the state of Oklahoma. I mean, you're really trying to put their life in context and how it's affected the state, isn't it?
Well, it is. But this is oral history. And so we start from their birth. They talk about their mother, their father, what they were like. And then we just get them going. And by the time they're in the elementary, they're on their way. And they are really talking and warmed up and anxious to tell. I love to say about former United States Senator Fred Harris, I went out to New Mexico to interview him, and he told his wife, he says, John Erling's coming here to interview me for a website. And she says, oh, good, you'll be talking about your favorite topic, you. And so they get warmed up, and you don't have to warm them up. You and I know, sometimes we have to warm guests up. These people don't. They're talking about, and they're in their 70s, 80s, and 90s, and not many people are coming around to sit down and say, now tell me about you, and look them in their face and tell them. And as you know, the toughest part of interviewing is listening. We have to really concentrate. And I don't know if you're like I am. Sometimes the mind can wander. And then just as soon as your mind has wandered, then they're talking about something way over here. And you say, okay, I'm sorry. What was that guy's name again? You know, so listening is key to interviewing. And I don't think a lot of people realize that.
Yeah, no, as you go through their life story, I mean, what I think is really important, though, is that you're really trying to understand not only, you know, you want to have a collection of those good stories you're talking about, like Walt Helmrich told you, but also, you know, what that meant for the state, and you're trying to put it in a broader context, aren't you?
Well, we are. I think I'm probably letting history do that. I don't think I am doing that myself, to be very honest with you. I'm just interviewing their lives, and then there are those who can pass judgment on how it affected the state. And by the way, as we talk about this, voicesofoklahoma.com, it is statewide. While it's easy for me to pick up interviews here in the Tulsa area, I've done a lot of interviews in Oklahoma City and in that area. So it's a statewide website, voicesofoklahoma.com.
Now, you mentioned you started with Walt Helmrich and Henry Zero, but you really have tried to get sort of a range of people, like famous people from the state, political figures, business leaders, and sometimes just people that have an interesting story to tell.
I like to make a point by saying this is not about the rich and famous, although I will admit I'm a promoter. I did go for names to draw attention to it. There's no question about that. But they have a right to tell their story, too, is the way I justified all that. But yes, there are people who nobody's heard about who have great stories to tell. All of us, after we've lived to a certain age, have great stories to tell. And I also try to tell people you need to interview your own family members. I interviewed my father many, many years ago because my son actually had a class of ancestries. So I said, sure, let's have Dad do that. Well, I have his voice, and it's so great. So as we talk about oral history of our state, those of you who are listening at home, you should do it because now we have such ample recording devices, and it's so easy to do, so that you should do it as well. Yeah. I might say that we're celebrating, you know, our fifth anniversary, and it was actually past Friday. Wilma Mankiller died on April 6, 2010, so we're just observing that 5 years ago. And then we launched with her interview on April 10th. Mm. And it's kind of interesting because she's in the news now. She's one of four women to replace Andrew Jackson on a $20 bill. Eleanor Roosevelt, Rosa Parks, Harriet Tubman, and our own Wilma Mankiller. Well, you see her picture there, but it's not always as it might seem to be. She was asked by the federal government and her family to move to San Francisco. And we can pick up on what she talks about that here.
Yeah. Oh, so let's hear a little bit of clip from this interview. This is one of the first interviews you did, wasn't it?
That's correct.
Yeah. This is Wilma Mankiller, one of the first interviews that launched Voices of Oklahoma 5 years ago, which is now a part of the Oklahoma Center for the Humanities at the University of Tulsa. And my guest is John Erling, the creative director for Voices of Oklahoma, as we hear his conversation with Wilma Mankiller.
Well, then the federal government had a relocation program that went into effect in the 50s.
Right.
And the government then seemed to want to break up these tribal communities.
Right. In the post-World War II era, the federal government thought that they should terminate any federal relationship they had with tribes. And they wanted to terminate their federal responsibility to the tribal governments and also abrogate the treaties and just have people go out and become part of the mainstream. So there was that sort of national mentality. And as part of that whole overall strategy of what we call the termination era, this policy of relocating Native people came into being. What they did was administered by the Department of Interior through the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and most of the people that were affected by relocation were half Cherokee or more. What the federal government would do to entice people to participate in the relocation program was promise them a better life for the children, an education, a job for the adults. So it was called the Relocation and Employment Training Program. They would relocate people from places like our community and rural Navajo Nation and other places like that to Chicago or Los Angeles or Denver or Phoenix or San Francisco, places like that. Our better life, our first night in San Francisco was at an old hotel in San Francisco in the Tenderloin District, which is the red light district of San Francisco. If you try to think of getting on a train in rural Adair County in the late 1950s, it was like landing in Mars. And my mom, who's not Cherokee, was still a very rural person. And so the whole thing was as bewildering to her as it was to the children or the other families that participated in the program. But the better life for my family ended up with my father and my older brother getting a backbreaking job at a rope factory. And our family eventually ended up in a very rough housing project called Hunters Point in San Francisco. And so the better life that a lot of people were promised didn't turn out that way at all.
That's my guest today, John Erling, speaking with Wilma Mankiller of Voices of Oklahoma. Been going on for 5 years. How many people have you talked to now?
Okay, we have 166 that I've interviewed.
Wow, and these are really long interviews. These are what, about
Well, they can be 2 hours, two and a half hours. Uh-huh. At the outset, sometimes they come back down to an hour and a half, but we break them down into chapters so nobody has to listen to the entire thing and kind of treat it as a book, kind of like books on tapes. Uh-huh. And by the way, we should promote the fact that we are on your iPhone and iPad, and a lot of people listen as they're traveling in the car to these great voices.
So this is the fifth year of Voices of Oklahoma, and you have this new partnership with the University of Tulsa. How did that come about?
We do. Well, it's timing is everything. It's been about a year ago that the Oklahoma Center for the Humanities was established here at TU through President Upham, and one of their focuses is history, questions of ethics, of memory, art, music, and literature. And so when this came to the attention of the president, I'm sure he didn't tell me this, but he thought, wait a minute, that's a great piece of history. Let's put that under the umbrella of the Oklahoma Center for the Humanities. Sean Latham is the director. He's professor of English, among many titles that he has here. And so that's how it came about. It's just one of those strokes of good things happening at the right time. And I'm indebted to them because now it's become institutionalized, becomes bigger than just me doing this. And it will be sustained for the generations to come as long as this university lasts.
You know, after your long career in broadcasting, this probably went into it, say, you know, this is a way to keep my hand in it. But at some point, this became a real passion for me.
Oh, it did become a real passion. And it is fun because radio was my first passion. But I use radio today because I get to play with all the toys that you get to play with and all that. And I get to interview people. But because I was in radio so long, I don't have to reintroduce myself to a lot of people.
Talk about the passion of this. I mean, this started out as sort of like a retirement hobby, and it's sort of overtaken what you've been doing. I mean, you started out doing just a few, and now you're up to 166.
Well, there's this thing about people will die, and there is that thing that drives me. And Wilma Mankiller, she was in ill health and had been for a number of years, and something said, you've got to get to her. The most dramatic was Marian Opala, Supreme Court Justice, and he was born in Lodz, Poland, and when the Nazis invaded Poland in 1939, he became part of the Polish underground, ultimately became a part of the British Army and German prisoner of war. It's a great story, and you need to listen to that at voicesofoklahoma.com. But I interviewed him in the council chambers of the Supreme Court. He was 89 years old, looking forward to his 90th birthday, and 4 days later, he died.
Wow.
Now, that's the most dramatic, right? There are some who say they will not be interviewed by me because they're afraid they're going to die. But I can assure you, nobody has died from a freak accident or anything afterward. But in memoriam, and we have a section there on our website, in memoriam, because we salute them, 34 of our people have passed away. But we have this on this website, which, to my knowledge, is the only website dedicated solely to oral history in preserving the legacy of our state.
I'm thinking of some of the last interviews. I think, didn't you do one of the last interviews with Henry Bellman?
I did. Yeah. I did indeed. And I think that was about 7-8 months later he died. And Henry, I'll never forget, I went to his farm, and he had Parkinson's, and his hands were shaking. And we were into this like about an hour, 45 minutes. And I thought, Henry, I said to him, Henry, is this enough? I didn't want to press him. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, this is fine. And he went 2.5 hours.
Wow.
He thoroughly enjoyed it. It is draining. It really is. And you sit and concentrate. But they laugh, they cry, and it's just so much fun. And at the end of it, I know they're happy about it. And I never thought I would be doing this. I have written 166 thank you notes. I've never been one to write in snail mail, thank you notes. But it's just like, that's the closure. I owe it to them because they gave their time. And then they give this vast knowledge that they have to students, educators, and all. And we have a student guide on our website that tells people, the students, if they want to know about a startup, say of Quick Trip and Chester Cadjo, they can go to, say, Chapter 4, or David Green of Hobby Lobby and how he got started. He got started with $600, and today Forbes is listing him at $6 billion, and he was just making little frames, and he talks about that. I came by Bama Pie today, right next to our campus here, and Mrs. Marshall talks about the simplicity of hard work. And so when I encourage people and students to listen to this, there is a historical yes, but there's also an example to be set by these great leaders who worked hard. And I think sometimes our young people today kind of think it's what's given to me. But Chester Cadjo, when the Quick Trip, he was working free for nothing in a grocery place just so he could learn the business way back when. Yeah. So they set examples. And we have 25 different topics that have come out of all of these interviews. And so my thinking is that one day somebody's going to say, you know what? I decided to go into politics because Governor George Nye was talking about it, and I was so intrigued, I went into it. And that does happen if somebody hears somebody speak, you know.
My guest today is John Erling, the creative director of Voices of Oklahoma, which is celebrating its fifth anniversary. John, of course, a longtime host on KRMG for many, many years. And then after he left there, he said, you know, I've got to keep my hand in. I've talked to people. That's what you do for a living. And so he started Voices of Oklahoma. I think it was sort of a labor of love at first, but it's really taken off. 166 interviews that are all available on his website. It's now part of the Oklahoma Center for the Humanities at the University of Tulsa, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. And, of course, you're collecting stories, stories that these people have told their entire lives at times in fragments, and you're really trying to get that whole story.
Like Marjorie Mayo from the Mayo Hotel, she talks about her story. Mayor Ron Norick from Oklahoma City, he was there as mayor of the Oklahoma City bombing. Bob Parker of Parker Drilling, Steve Stevenson, and he was so busy he had a hard time scheduling me in because he was about playing tennis a lot. Let me say one story about Oral Roberts, and that was another in one of those interviews. It was about 8-9 months later, and I went out to California, and people wondered if he lived in the lap of luxury, and he didn't. It was very worn furniture and very worn big blue chair, and he sat there with a blanket up to his neck because he'd been obviously in ill health, but he couldn't have been nicer to me. And as you know, and the public here would know, is I had some fun with Oral.
Yes, you did.
At the expense of his money-raising tactics. I never was making fun of his faith and the very core of his faith. I never did that. But I didn't know if he knew what he had more to do than listen to this Tulsa radio station.
Right.
And so I go out there and we're interviewing him. And I was probably the most nervous I've ever been.
I would imagine.
Yeah. I was really tight.
For those who don't have the long history, when Oral Roberts was embarking on the City of Faith, You were mocking the fundraising efforts pretty seriously.
Well, he talked about a 900-foot Jesus, and I had a 900-foot Lassie, and I did everything. And when he said his life would be taken if he didn't raise, then my dog would be taken if I didn't raise all this cat food and dog food, which, by the way, we raised about 25,000 cat. I did all that stuff.
Yeah, right.
So when I sat before him, I didn't know. But I had talked to him on the phone. He said, now tell me about this again. He said, I think that's a good idea. So we went out there, and so he's talking about the media, and I talked about the media to him, and he said, you know, when the media came after me, he says, I never pushed back. Did I, John? And I knew he had me. And, you know, it made me respect him even more because his people couldn't appreciate fully what I was doing, just mocking that side of him. Yeah. He was a tremendous fundraiser, and he did certain things to get people's attention, is what he did. And he was so talented. But when he said that, and I'll never forget, I can still see him walking down the hall to his bedroom, and that's the last I saw of him, and then he died 8 or 9 months later. So I was very appreciative of getting that interview. And he's the only one when I ask, where was your mother born? And he said, well, John, I don't know. He said, I think she was born on the banks of a river somewhere. You see, he was Native American himself. Mm. He had some Cherokee in him. and his mother hid that. She was born on the banks of a river somewhere, and to think that that kind of talent was able to rise up from the banks of a river.
Yeah. Now we have another clip. This is of Ben Henneke, who was a president emeritus of the University of Tulsa. Very involved. He founded this radio station, as a matter of fact, and you did an interview with him.
And that's another thing. And 6 months later, he passed away, as a matter of fact. So charismatic. I'd never met him before. I had just heard about him and all. And Ed Dumit, who is the man who identifies this radio station, that beautiful voice, I've interviewed him. He's no longer with us, but you can still hear his voice on this radio station. Ed joined me on this interview, and I thought it was kind of cute how this 16th president of the University of Tulsa, Ben Henneke, talks about how he wrote the TU fight song.
I must point out that while you were a student at TU, they were looking for a fight song.
In the days of when I was a student, civic clubs all had noontime meetings because there were all kinds of places downtown, and they were all working downtown. But all these people downtown at noontime went together someplace, and so there were civic clubs to which they went. And every civic club they went to, there was a man named Clark of Clark's Good Clothiers.
That was Harry Clark.
Yes, Harry. And he directed the singing. And he would get up and they would sing Oklahoma, only it hadn't yet been written, but that sort of thing. They would sing a repertoire of numbers, all of whom we in college sneered at. But they were very happy singing them. And then they would end up with the fight songs of the schools that were having football games. And so they would sing the OU Boomer Sooner, which they had gotten from Yale. And they would sing the OSU song, which was song from a musical comedy on Broadway back in the 20s, to which they had written fight words. And for TU, they sang a song, the Teepee Song. It wasn't much of a song, but at least it was original and it was strictly Tulsa's. But the men didn't know it, and they didn't like singing it, and it didn't get the rousing response at the end of the singing that a fight song should get when you're in a public group and you're all singing together. And so Harry Clark thought something ought to be done about it, and so he offered a prize. If someone would write a fight song for the University of Tulsa, he offered $25.
Big money.
I want you to know, I, who had never written a song, a sophomore who didn't know the university, wrote a song because he had a mother who said, somebody's going to win and it might as well be you. Sit down to the piano. And so I sat down to the piano and nothing happened. And she kept saying, how is the fight song coming? And I kept... So eventually one Saturday, as I pushed the vacuum cleaner back and forth, the rhythm of the fight song came to me. And so if today you listen to it carefully, you will hear the music of a very famous vacuum cleaner. And I wrote words to it, and I wrote the music by singing that song and lifting up my finger when I found the note on the piano and then writing that down. And then when I needed a chord, I wrote down one note and then wrote down the other two until I had a triad. The music school have been ashamed that anybody of the university had to write a song so brutally as I did.
That's Ben Henneke with John Erling from Voices of Oklahoma. Voices of Oklahoma is celebrating its fifth year, and it's also a new partnership with the University of Tulsa at the Oklahoma Center for the Humanities, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, give us a sense of what you're wanting to do as now as a part of the University of Tulsa with this sponsorship from the Center for the Humanities. Are you going to change anything you're doing? Or
no, I've been given carte blanche. They want me to continue doing exactly what I'm doing right now, and I appreciate that very much. I mean, it does belong now to the university, and yes, I was the founder, but they come along and it's financed by them, so they say keep doing what you're doing and be the creative director. And so,
well, tell us some of the people you're just talking to these days. I mean, within the last few months, that'll be coming up on the web shortly.
In Chickasha, Oklahoma, somebody out there texted or he emailed President Upham And he said, we have a lady out here by the name of Loretta Fletcher, and she's 80 years old. She's African-American, and she's done untold things out here. And through the, I would have never known about it if it hadn't been for TU Connection. And I went out to interview her, and she had moved a schoolhouse from Verdon, Oklahoma, not far from Chickasha. And on the front of the schoolhouse, it says, Verdon Separate School. And back in the 50s, blacks went to that separate one-room schoolhouse while everybody else went to Lincoln High School and had all the very latest. And so it was refurbished and moved to property on Dakota Avenue there in Chickasha. And now it has become a field trip location, destination for students around the state to come to hear a lecture on how blacks were treated back then. And she moved that. And it's when you walk into that schoolhouse, it's absolutely amazing. It's just like walking into a time capsule. And you just sit, look at those little desks. And it was a white farmer who actually bought the land, and he allowed the school to continue. But I think the more that everybody remembers how blacks were treated separate, you know, then we won't carry that discussion into the future. Civil rights laws keep us where we are, but hearts need to come along with that. And so it's stories like that.
So Mrs. Fletcher basically is reminding us of our past history and saying, you know, this is where we were, here's where we are now. And you have this great time capsule, this school.
I do, and she was a great, great interview, a beautiful lady. And I was sitting talking to her, and I drove away, and I thought, wait a minute, I forgot to say again, you're 80, because I forgot that she was 80 years old. Uh-huh. And I'm sure, Rich, this happens to you, the question you should have asked.
Oh, right, yeah, all the time.
There is one that nags me with Oral Roberts. He said he didn't like Richard Nixon. And so you'd wonder why. Yeah. I didn't ask it. Well, I didn't ask it. But along the lines of we don't want the past to be repeated, in Sunday's Tulsa World was the story of Eva Unterman.
Yes.
And Holocaust survivor, her turn to share. I have it right here. And so we have Eva Unterman telling her story on voicesofoklahoma.com because she shares that story so that we're not going to repeat. Now, unfortunately, both these topics about blacks and Jews, there seems to be unrest, even in our land today, as you know, and in Europe. Mm-hmm. And so these stories need to be repeated and told again. This is the way it was. We don't want to repeat. So that's part of the overall, too, that we serve. I don't know. I may be more passionate about this today than I was about radio.
That's great.
And you know what is fun is I never thought talking about radio was all that interesting. And people want me to come out and speak about radio and think, I thought it was just nothing to talk about. But now I finally have something to talk about.
Well, it is a great project. And you can see all of these interviews and hear them at voicesofoklahoma.com. John Erling, wish you great success with this. And keep on interviewing these great Oklahomans. And we look forward to hearing it. Thanks
I'm
for
going to do
us.
That. It's my pleasure. Thanks, Rich.
John Erling speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. His Voices of Oklahoma Oral History Project, which features over 160 interviews with prominent and important Oklahomans discussing their life stories, is available at voicesofoklahoma.com. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.